Craig Bolanos joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the founder and wealth advisor at VestGen Wealth Partners. Their new website is GetRetiredStayRetired.com. Okay, Craig, Dow is down today. The markets took a dip. What's going on here?
Hey, might not have been a great start to January, but sometimes good news is bad news for stocks. And what we all learned today is the non-farm payrolls that came out at 7:30 this morning, the number was hot. We actually created 256,000 jobs. We were only looking for 155,000. So that's good news if you're a citizen of this great country. That's good news for anyone who wants a soft landing and avoid a recession. But it's bad news because it means when the jobs market is hot and the economy is growing, you run the risk of inflation staying elevated. And that means the Federal Reserve is on pause. No rate cuts coming in January.
That also means your retirement funds took a little dip.
It does mean your 401k has taken a dip, but I'm so happy you used the word dip correctly, John, because in any given year, it is not uncommon that we have two dips. I call them 5% dips. In fact, every 14 months, we typically have a correction of at least 10%. We're overdue for that. But if somebody said to me, what should my takeaway be? What's the big important thing to remember on a day like this when it's a sea of red in the stock market? It's that the economy is doing better than expected. And ultimately, that means there is a potential for better earnings, less risk of a recession. And you know what? As a long-term investor, that's what matters to me.
Well, I'm glad you said all of that because it was, as Steve Alexander said, one of those days where good news is bad news. It sounds like if you had to have a day like this or not have a day like this, good jobs means bad for the market, you would make that deal, right?
I would make that deal because what really matters is we don't want things to be too hot. We don't want them to be too cold. We want them to feel just about right. And investing longer term through a climate where we have people that can get jobs, get decent wages, which ultimately drives consumer spending, which ultimately determines the health of the U.S. economy, that's ultimately what's important for all of us.
So is this going to stall, though, interest rate reductions?
I think very specifically is this. We had the cuts in September. We had the cuts in November. We got the cut in December. You and I talked about this on this very program. But looking out to the 8 policy meetings that we have in 2025, there's 8 decision meetings. I don't think there's any cut in January. I don't think there's a chance you see anything in March. The first opportunity to get any form of a rate cut, and 1 to 2 rate cuts at the most this year, John, that's what we think about, is really until July, September. And part
really?
Of that,
wow.
Yeah, out to July or September. And part of that is dictated by the fact that the Federal Reserve needs to see what the policies are going to be that gets enacted from this new Congress once everyone's sworn in. And that's going to take some time because the Federal Reserve doesn't want to be working against fiscal stimulus if it's going to be coming down the pipe.
Fiscal stimulus, what do you mean by that?
Well, we know that you have an administration coming in that some people widely view as pro-growth. But we also have an administration coming in that has a track record and has a history. And one thing is for certain, ever since the election, Treasury bond yields have been going up. And while there's a lot of reasons for that, there's some underpinnings that tariffs could be difficult if they became fruition versus just tough talk and bravado. And number two, if you end up having larger stimulus packages, larger tax cuts on top of the renewal of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, all of that could further spark inflation. And I think the Federal Reserve is going to need to see where that lands before they make additional policy decisions.
Stimulus spending last time, though, was predicated on the pandemic. That's in the rearview mirror. I thought this administration or Congress was going to be a little tighter with the purse strings.
You know, you would hope so. But, you know, when you have the votes and you have the mandate, right? I mean, you can literally pass what you want to pass when you've got control of the Senate, the House, and the Oval Office. Sometimes money gets spent. Both parties have a history of spending a little too much money. That's right. So in no way, shape, or form am I being critical. In fact, I am encouraged by a new administration coming in, pro-growth, less regulation, stimulus. That's good because we're talking about investments and economies right now. But again, we're just going to have to wait and see. But no, I predict no rate cuts until the second half of the year.
We're talking to Craig Bolanos on the Wintrust Business Lunch. He doesn't think the Fed's going to do anything with interest rates until the September meeting. Was that the one you picked, Craig?
I said the first chance is July, more likely September. You see one or two cuts this year.
So while you are optimistic about the economy, the new Congress, and you'd make the trade or hot jobs report for lower stock indices, how comfortable are you then with the fact that these interest rates, which have been pretty stubborn now, have inched up, are going to stay high? If we want credit card debt to go down, if we want home sales to go up, we're going to have to wait. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think at the end of the day, what drives home sales is a combination of several different factors unique to each local market. But again, I think what's good for investors and good for citizens of this great economy is to have an unemployment rate staying below 5%. And we're certainly there at 4.1. Don't get me wrong. The fact that we're going to have elevated interest rates hurts small business. Hurts people who have borrowed debt. But John, I don't know about you. I remember having a mortgage at 8 7/8 and things were just fine. I remember having a mortgage at 7 1/4 and things were just fine. And of course, I celebrated my 2.5% mortgage, right. But those days are just never coming back.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because when you and I were paying double digits for our first houses, nobody was sitting on 3% mortgages. So it strikes me as maybe supply would ease some of this, but the real estate market is not going to move that fast if people are not going to sell homes that are mortgaged at 2 or 3%.
No, and we see that throughout the clients at VestGen Wealth Partners, whether it's our core clients, whether it's the adult children. There are lots of people who are choosing to say, you know what, we're not going to move. We're not going to pay the embedded interest rates. Instead of getting in a new house with an additional bedroom, we're going to go back to what we used to do in the 70s and 80s. We're just going to put in bunk beds. So, John, I predict bunk bed sales will continue to stay elevated in the months and year to come.
Yeah, you might not be kidding on that. What do you make about Bitcoin these days, or cryptocurrencies in general?
Well, I mean, whether it's Bitcoin, the headline, the dominant position in the world of virtual currency or any of them, they are here to stay and they are being recognized more and more as an asset class. And once we got to a point that we had not one, not two, but 11 exchange-traded products tracking the spot price of Bitcoin, I think Bitcoin is here to stay. But we all need to understand that the volatility, the VIX in an asset like this is going to be large. And we were trading at 105,000 and then down to 91,000 and then down to back up to 95,000. Do I think Bitcoin's going to break and have a repeat of the crash it did in 2022? I don't think so. I think there's a lot more institutional and retail support and interest in the asset class that is cryptocurrency as an alternative storage of value.
Okay, well, you answered my next question. An alternative storage of value, which means it's not a currency. It means it's an investment based on something I don't understand, based on, I guess, supply and demand, based on desirability. But based on what? Like, what does cryptocurrency mean for us in the near term?
Well, we have to separate it into two things. You know, at some point in time, are we going to see an elevated amount of transactions, the payments for goods and services using cryptocurrency? I think that's eventually going to occur. Like anything, things have a way of changing. John, it used to be cash, then it went from cash to credit cards, and now it's credit cards followed by digital payment apps followed by cash. But what I think about is from an asset allocation perspective, I'm not saying that people need or are missing out if they don't have cryptocurrency as a part of their asset allocation. But I'm here to say on the front lines as a registered investment advisor, more and more financial advisors, more and more retail investors are wondering whether they should start making small allocations to cryptocurrency ETFs as a part of their long-term financial plans.
But why would I pay for something with cryptocurrency right now, though, since the value of it fluctuates so wildly, you know?
It makes it incredibly difficult to do. In fact, the other comment would be, why should someone rendering the good or service from you, John,
right,
receive a payment in cryptocurrency because of the VIX or because of the risk? All I know is the poor guy who spent 10,000 bitcoins to order a pizza 20 years ago, that gentleman is still sad thinking about dorm room money improperly
yeah.
spent.
Yeah, right. But let's just expand on that. So I have a $1,000 bill and I'm going to pay you with Bitcoin. And now you have $1,000 worth of Bitcoin. And the next day, it's worth $900. That happens, and it doesn't happen with dollars. It doesn't happen with your credit card. So I just don't understand the use of it as currency. It's not a good way to transact business, but if it keeps going up, then it looks like a smart investment, right?
You made a very good differentiator. That's correct. We are not yet there in the efficacy for it to be transactable because of the wide variance in the spot price. Right now, it really needs to be looked through the eyes as an investment or as an alternative storage of value, in the same way people have used gold and silver for a long period of time.
Which do fluctuate, but you don't see people dropping Krugerrands around when they go to the store. So do you think then that crypto is a good place right now? I guess you're answering this for us, but you would put some of your portfolio in crypto. Is that right?
What I'm suggesting is this, and I'm not being evasive, John. Everybody should start getting educated, not just on digital payments, not just on cryptocurrency. People should start reading about blockchain. That's the technology of that open peer-to-peer network. And once people become more educated and once things become more mainstream, I think that ends up being a very personal decision, and people should take a look at whether or not they want to invest in this asset class as a long-term part of their retirement plan.
I'm a little leery about
it.
Yeah, yeah. What's the future of electronic payments, either person-to-person or person-to-retailer? It seems to me like that's more vulnerable than I want it to be. I don't know. What are your thoughts about that, Craig?
I think I'm a dinosaur, John. When I was in Florida just recently, and now this is a true story, John, I'm sitting at a Publix, right? And here's what happens. The person in front of me, they pay with their phone. Presumably, it might have been a digital payment app. The next person paid with their watch. They paid with their watch. And then here comes me, and I'm trying to decide, as I'll tell you, I'm buying a bottle of wine and some ice cream because we're going to watch a movie at home. Yes, it's a great dinner date. I'm trying to decide, should I use cash or credit card? I felt so behind. But clearly, digital payments are here, and I just saw it in the Publix when I was in Southwest Florida.
I know. I find myself more often than I ever thought I would saying, will you take cash? They look at me like I've offered them beads and a horse hide, you know? I'm like, it's American currency. One last set of questions for you. Just a minute and a half left with Craig Bolanos. And that is, are there areas of the economy that you think are ripe for expansion or you'd be hesitant in investing in right now? I'm thinking leisure, retail, banking. What are the hot areas or the best bets right now?
Well, I think number one, technology is not dead, and people should continue to have that overweight to technology because, again, innovation creates disruption, and that's a very investable asset class. Part number two, geography matters. If you're going to have a lack of interest rate cuts, and you're going to have a stronger U.S. dollar, that creates some significant headwinds for foreign investments. So I think most people's geography should be primarily North America, primarily in the United States. And the last two ideas, John, is I think people should be focusing on bonds for ballast. That means higher credit quality, neutral in their duration, and take a look at that unique hybrid security that is preferred stock. I think it's got merit going into 2025.
Craig Bolanos is the founder and wealth advisor at VestGen Wealth Partners. Their new website is getretiredstayretired.com. Nice to talk to you today, Craig. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, John.
Thanks for dialing in on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. We're joined again by Carl Prouty over at Apt. He's their technologist, and he's done an interesting series of videos based on the Consumer Electronics Show. Carl, welcome back. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm doing well, John. How are you?
Good. So I guess you went to the show, right?
We did. We arrived back home at about 2 o'clock this morning, so it's a long night and a long week, but we had a lot of fun.
Yeah, you beat the snow too. Good on you.
Yeah.
And are those videos up now, or do you also have videos from previous years? What can I see from based on what you saw?
They are. So we've got about 70 videos up on our YouTube channel, which is just Apt Electronics. If you're on YouTube, and you can go to our playlist and watch all of them. There's actually a few more that are still going to be added today. But we covered as much of the show as we could to try and give everybody who wants or who can't attend a chance to kind of see what's going on there.
What did you see? What are some of the videos that are striking or surprising?
Well, one of them that is a little closer to home is actually a 115-inch TV from TCL. And we actually have one of these at our store on display. So if somebody wants to see it in person, they can stop in and check it out. Right in front of them. It's incredible. 115 inches is just massive. You put this thing in your family room and you're going to feel like you're at the sporting event that you're watching. Or if you're playing video games, you're going to feel like you're a part of the video game. It is incredible.
Immersive might be the word. I wonder, is there in your industry a ratio like size of TV to distance from it or size of the room? I've seen people whose TVs to me are too big for the room. I have one that's too small for the room. I wonder if there's a way to measure what's the best one, you know?
There is. We actually have some guides on our website, which is just app.com. But generally, if you're going to sit about anywhere from 8 to 10 feet away, which is pretty typical for people's family rooms, 65 to 77 inches is about where you want to be. But really, it's whatever you're most comfortable with and whatever your budget can allow you to get. So there's not hard, fast rules, but a couple things to keep in mind.
I've asked you this before. I don't remember if you remember the same answer I'm going to ask you for. And that is just in terms of overall quality, clarity, and navigability, what's the best brand out there? What do you recommend?
Boy, there's a lot of good ones. We sell a lot of Sony, a lot of Samsung, and a lot of LG. I honestly like all of them. There's benefits to each one. Sony's probably the most accurate picture. Samsung kind of gives you the best of both worlds, and LG with their OLED TVs gives you just this incredible contrast. You get these really deep black levels, these really vibrant colors, and it's just they're all good. You really can't go wrong anymore.
I will sometimes be in a store and I'll see the wall of TVs and. I do see a difference, but I don't know which one I would prefer. But I do understand one clicker versus two or too many menu options. Is that more a function of how I'm getting the picture, that is cable or satellite or the internet, or is it a function of the TV? Would one TV brand be easier to click through?
In my experience, I would say LG is the most intuitive. I like the way their remote works because it brings up a cursor on the screen in on most of their devices or on most of their TVs. And that kind of helps navigate things, helps type things in a little bit more quickly. But they really they all have lots of menus that you can kind of get lost in if you really want to explore what the TV does. But most of them are easy to use right out of the box if you just choose one of the preset picture settings. And that's, you know, that's one of the reasons why people like to shop with us too, because if you get one of these TVs from us and you're having trouble setting it up, you can call us because you get free lifetime technical support. So one of our technicians can kind of help you navigate through those menus so you don't really have to worry about doing anything wrong or getting to a point where you can't get back to where you were.
Yeah. I'm not surprised we're talking about TVs because you were first of all, you're the technologist at Apt, but also you were at the Consumer Electronics Show. Was there another category that was interesting to you this year?
Oh, there were lots. So Segway, which I think a lot of people are familiar with because of their electric scooters and their hoverboards, products like that. Segway actually was showing a robotic lawnmower that can cut up to 2.5 acres, which is double the efficiency of their current model. So it's one of those things where if you're kind of tired of walking around cutting your grass every week, like this last year we had so much rain that it felt like I was out there every day almost. This is something that can help you take care of that. And up to 2.5 acres, it can cover a big yard. So you've got stuff like that. There, Lenovo had a laptop that was really cool. I thought one of the best things we saw, which has a button on it. And you push the button and the screen goes from 14 inches up to 16.7 inches. So it's got this little rolling mechanism at the bottom that lifts the top of the screen up. So we saw rollable OLED screens a couple years ago at CES. Now they're incorporating that technology into laptops. And that, I thought that was great. And really one of the most shocking things that we saw was an e-ink picture frame, which is e-ink is kind of the technology that you see on an Amazon Kindle, for example. So it looks like paper. It looks like you're reading off of regular paper. And they've got color versions now, this brand called Aluratech, and you put pictures on this photo frame that you hang on your wall. It's really light, so it's like hanging a regular picture frame, and it'll display a digital picture that looks like a painting or a family photograph. Yeah. And you can store up to, I think they said, about 10 photos on it at a time, but the battery that you charge inside of it will last up to 12 months on a single charge. So you're not going to have to take it down off your wall all the time to recharge it. It's going to be able to stay up there and blend in perfectly with its surroundings.
That is used just for displaying photographs, or is that also a TV?
That one is just going to be for photographs. So Samsung and TCL, for that matter, they both have frame televisions. So if you're looking for a little more flexibility, you do have options there. So Samsung's frame TV has been around for a while, that you have the option to put photos on, put paintings on, and it will also look just like a photo or a painting hanging on your wall. Yeah. The TCL one that we saw at the show, we don't have that one at the store yet, but the one we saw at the show looked amazing as well. It's very similar to the Samsung. They both have big categories or big catalogs of paintings that you can choose from. Samsung has a subscription service. TCL gives you a lot for free as well. But just really, really cool technology if you're looking for something that doesn't necessarily look like a TV when it's turned off.
Right. But so are those, I could get the Mona Lisa, or is it my own pictures on my camera roll? I guess it could be either or, huh?
You can do either one. That's the great part about it, is you're not limited at all. As far as the artwork, I suppose you're a little limited with artwork because they license it and things like that. But as far as family photos, things like that, any picture you take can be on that TV and be displayed as a photo in your living room, in your, you know, above your fireplace, wherever you decide to put it.
Yeah. Apple does the rollout of their products and phones, but was there something new in the phone department at the CES?
Not specifically from Apple, but we stopped at the Asus booth. There, it's a computer brand. They do a lot of computer products, but they also have a gaming phone. And the phone was really cool because on the front of it, it's a powerful phone. If you are a mobile gamer, that's definitely a phone you're going to want to look at because the specs on it are incredible. It's very, very powerful, so you can run high-end games on there. But when you flip it over, and we have a video of this on our YouTube page, so check it out if you're if this is something you're interested in. But on the back of it, they have a little sort of like a black and white little LED screen, so you can make a custom message, you can put a little custom game on the back, and it adds a little pop to the outside of your phone.
Hmm. By the way, my TV set's starting to pixelate, and it's not that old. I suppose if that's happening, it's the TV, it's not the cable. And what's the shelf life of a TV? I suppose getting it fixed is going to cost, I don't know that it's worth getting it fixed. TVs are so inexpensive, but what's going on there?
Yeah, that sort of seems to be the consensus. If it's pixelating, it could be the feed. It could be a cable that you have connected from your cable box to your TV. So those are things you'll want to check. If you're using an antenna, because most of these are digital signals now, you'll either get a picture or you won't. So if you see the picture go away, that might mean you need to change the location of your antenna or adjust it a little bit. But if it is a problem with the TV, it is kind of to the point where a lot of them are, it's worth looking at a new TV. I still have a Samsung that's 10 years old. I have a Panasonic that's 13 years old. So the lifespan is still good on them. But if you wind up in a situation where you've had it for 5 years and you're starting to experience a problem, it's probably a better investment to start looking at a new model because the prices have come down so much and the quality has improved so much.
Carl Prouty's on the line, the technologist at Apt Electronics. You got a question? 312-981-7200. You can call right now. By the way, your folks from Apt outfitted my son's kitchen recently, and they couldn't have been happier. So pass along our appreciation for all they did. Grant and Nikki are pretty happy with what happened at their place. If you've got a question, 312-981-7200 is the number. Let's update you on more business news first, though. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Deerfield-based Walgreens had a better-than-expected fiscal first quarter. Shares rose as the company outlined ongoing plans to revive its struggling business. Walgreens says it made progress on improving shrinking prescription reimbursement and closing stores. The company has also been exploring strategic options, including a sale. Revenue was higher during the quarter, driven by higher prices for branded drugs and prescription volumes. Walgreens International and U.S. healthcare units also beat on sales. Wisconsin-based Kohl's is closing more than 24 underperforming department stores, most of them in California. But two of the stores slated for closure are in the Chicago area. One is in Plainfield, the other is in West Dundee. They will close by April. Kohl's says a total of 27 stores are closing out of 1,150 locations. Impacted employees will be offered a severance package or a chance to apply for another role with the company. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of food time now. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And we are sponsored again today by the Chevy Silverado. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. Tina Feldstein is on the phone. She's the co-founder and CEO of the South Loop Farmers Market. And beginning Sunday, there will be a farmers market in an unlikely place, the Magmiles Water Tower Place, inside on the fourth floor.
Everything you could kind of think of that you might associate with a farmers market, plus a lot of artisans and other makers and a variety of different types of entertainment.
Everything you love about the outdoor summer farmers markets in Chicago, including a lot of fresh produce, despite the weather.
There's so much now that is being grown in, you know, greenhouses or hoop houses. So, I mean, you're going to have all your root vegetables, carrots, tomatoes, microgreens, tons and tons of lettuces and mushrooms, canned vegetables, beets, asparagus. Even there's a lot of sauce and things. I mean, there's a lot that people will be surprised to find that's fresh.
And for those of us who remember Water Tower as a food destination,
one of the great things about the market is it's really bringing food back to Water Tower Place, and there's going to be so much ready to eat. So people will be able to come, and you'll be able to literally have lunch.
Plus, live bands and other entertainment.
It's not just come shop and leave. It's connect with community, connect with neighbors, you know, get to know these amazing food businesses as well. So it's somewhat of a happening.
The Water Tower Place Farmers Market debuts this Sunday,
12 noon to 4 p.m. And we will be there every single Sunday for 12 straight weeks.
Tina Feldstein says the backstory on this is that the South Loop Farmers Market went indoors last year at the Roosevelt Collection.
And it was just an amazingly big hit. I mean, people really, really love to be able to continue the market season indoors.
And that went so well, the Water Tower Place people
said, hey, you know, let's do something like that here. So we're back again on Saturdays at the Roosevelt Collection from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then on Sundays, we're at Water Tower Place.
Bring your tote bags.
And you can bring your dog. You can bring your kids. Bring your mom.
Water Tower Place, fourth level, Sunday, noon to 4. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. We're talking to the technologist over at Apt, Carl Prouty, about, well, technology. He just got back from the Consumer Electronics Show. Lots of calls for you, Carl. Let's take a couple of those. Although I will ask you also to tell us about AI and how that's being integrated into these gadgets these days. But let's pick up a couple of phone lines. Let's start with Tom. Tom, you've got a question. You're on WGN.
Yes. A major cell phone company has an offer that if you switch to their internet, which is a very good price they're offering, they will give you at your choice either a $150 Visa prepaid card or a 40-inch Amazon Fire Series 2, which is the current model. I know that Amazon is worth more than $150. I'm wondering, is that a good television to get in this deal? Or do I take the prepaid card and just get my own TV?
I'm kind of the mindset that you take the prepaid card and get your own TV, because that way you can kind of choose which one you like the looks of the best. The Amazon Fire TVs are pretty good. There are models out there that are worth spending up a little bit for. So my choice would be to take the card and go to a store, come to our store, really, if you live in the area, and check out all the options, because there are some out there that are going to blow your mind, and they're not terribly expensive.
Okay, good luck to you on that. Kathy, you're on WGN. How can we help you?
I said this was serendipitous. I was just talking to my computer, my IT guy. I'm in the market for a refrigerator, a computer for my grandson, a laptop, and a computer for myself. I just had a cornea transplant, so I'm concerned about the monitors and everything. And I'm wondering, should I talk to someone before I go there to tell them, like a concierge, and he can direct me in the right direction? Or do I go online first? And how do I go about this?
You mean when you walk into the store, huh?
Correct, yes, yes.
It's whatever's easiest for you. We have services to help everybody. So if you wanted to chat with somebody online, you can do that. You can give us a call.
Okay.
You can stop in the store. You don't have to make a reservation or anything like that. If you go there, somebody's going to be in our computer department that can help.
Okay. All right. That's what I wanted to know. And we're talking about discounts. My husband's retired fireman. My son, who's a policeman, he was saying how they have discounts for different services.
We do, yeah. You can find all those on our website, but that's something they'll be able to help you out with in the store as well.
Good luck to you. And good luck getting out of there without spending a lot of money, because it's so fun. You go, oh, look at this. And then you go, I don't need a new grill, but wow, let's get the grill. Or or let's get a new washer. I mean, it must be fun just to roam around the hallways of your massive store.
It is. I've been there for 22 years. I love it. It's a great place to work. It's a great place to shop, and it's a great place to hang out. It's really, the store is set up to be a place that people can go to, even if they don't need to buy anything. It's got a lot to offer.
Yeah. AI, 60 seconds left. How is that being integrated into the stuff at the show?
Oh my gosh, everywhere. Every single booth we went to, every single person we talked to, AI was on their minds and in their products. LG had a really cool display where you would sit on a couch and you're watching a movie, and then you get up and to go play a video game. And when it detects you walking over your computer, it shuts the blinds, it changes the lighting to an ambient setting, sets up your computer, turns on the humidifier and the air purifier to give you what LG considers to be an optimal gaming environment. It's wild what they're able to do, and the way it integrates into everything. It's not limited. You don't have to buy all one brand anymore. It's going to be inter-brand. So you can, you have an LG this and a Samsung that and a Sony this, and they'll soon all be able to talk to one another, which is really, I think, where everyone's going to find some benefits.
Say hi to everybody with all those funny name tags over there, Carl, and thanks for visiting with us again.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Carl Prouty is the technologist at Apt Electronics in Glenview.